welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for Haunted Attraction Haunted Entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. Mm-hmm. And happy Monday to you, or whenever you choose to listen to it. We're on your time here.
Right.
You're not really on our time. This is not a live broadcast medium. To us, it's Sunday.
Yes, but nobody else hears
us. We're coming to you from the past. Ooh.
Yes.
It sounds spooky when you do the ooh. Actually, just that sounds like you're ooh.
They can't see you do that. You know that, right?
Yes, they can. I'm making ghost fingers. Oh, God. Well, I'd say we should do a video podcast, but considering we're sitting in the middle of a floral storeroom currently,
yeah.
Probably not the place. We're probably going to get something like set up to do it.
Yeah, my new craft is kind of taking over again.
Minecraft, that's a great game.
No.
Anyways, this is indeed Haunt Weekly. It's not the Minecraft or the floral podcast or any other podcast you might have been tempted to think it was. We can found at hauntweekly.com or hauntweekly on Twitter, hauntweekly on Facebook, tinyurl.com/hauntweekly will take you to our YouTube channel. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are distributed.
Yes.
And this week we're going to get into everything in a minute. Mm-hmm. But we have something of a downer week for you.
Right.
You know, like, Cyanide and Happen, it's one of our favorite online comic series. They do a depressing comic week. Welcome to depressing at Haunt Weekly week.
Well, yeah. I guess technically it is a week, even though it's just one episode.
Yeah. Well, you know, they do seven comics or five. Do they do a week? I think they do six comics a week in one cartoon. So, but yeah. Still, either way, they have depressing comic week, which is multiple things.
Right.
We just have one episode for our depressing comic week.
Yes. Because this is Haunt Weekly and not Haunt Daily.
Yeah, thank God for that.
No kidding.
Oh my God, I cannot believe that. And by the way, I hope all of you who went to Trans World are returning and nestling in and are safe and sound, tucked away in your beds.
Yeah.
We didn't really get a chance to say that last week. Hopefully you've recovered from the drinking and the debauchery.
And any colds that always come with conferences.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the plague of Trans World is currently circulating around the community as we speak.
Yeah.
But anyways, hope that you are well, and hope that you're getting back to work, because Halloween's coming up, buddies.
I know. We gotta get started.
We gotta get more started, definitely.
Yeah.
But anyways, since Trans World's over, let's talk about what comics are coming up next. It's an even week. I begin. First off, May 10th through the 12th. It's the West Coast Haunters Convention in Portland, Oregon, at the Doubletree Hotel. They'll be touring Nightmare Factory Haunted House. We'll also include a costume ball, a silent auction, and the Nightmare After West Coast Haunters Convention Film Festival with a secret selection of films. More details, hauntersconvention.com.
Okay, then it's Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention at the Ohio State Reformatory. It'll be May 17th through the 19th in Mansfield, Ohio, touring six haunted houses. Pre-show includes Hauntville, the Hudson House, and Haunted Hydro. During the week, they'll be going to Blood Prison, Lessons in Fear, and Trail of Nightmares. It includes Freakers Ball, Costume Party, Ghost Hunt, and more. Ohio Halloween and hauntersconvention.com.
All right, after that, in Schaumburg, Illinois, it's the Midwest Haunters Convention. Weren't we just in Schaumburg? It sure feels like we were.
Not too long ago.
It'll be June 7th through the June 9th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center Hotel. Tours of Dead Rising, Midnight Terror, Massacre, Basement of the Dead, and Hell's Gate. All five haunts we've been to, thanks to the Lost Souls Haunted Bus Tour. All awesome.
Yes.
Do recommend MidwestHauntersConvention.com.
Okay, then June 21st through the 23rd, it's Michigan Haunt Fest, the Oaks Campground in Munith, Michigan. It features make and takes, a campsite decorating contest, and a pancake breakfast. Some of the proceeds benefit the Humane Society, michiganhauntfest.weebly.com.
Alright, and after that, it's Haunter Horde Gathering in Mount Carroll, Illinois, the Mount Carroll Bowling Center, which I believe we have driven past, but not actually been in.
Yeah, we tried to go into it, but we never caught it when it was open.
Yeah, they had beer and food. Those were the reasons we wanted to go. And
yes.
Unfortunately, we were only there for 24 hours. We were in and out like we were robbing the joint, because we were doing what they're doing,
right,
touring Raven's Grin Inn, except they're doing it on July 27th. We did it previously.
Right.
There'll be an auction for Scares That Care and Don't Be a Monster. There will be free pizza. There will be a cash bar, so you have to pay for your booze. Admission to the conference is only $5. That is a screaming good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the tour of Raven's Grin Inn is another $15, which coincidentally is the cost of a tour of Raven's Grin Inn.
Right.
Haunter Horde, that's HaunterHorde.com.
Okay. And then July 27th through the 28th, it's Texas Haunters Convention in Mesquite, Texas, Mesquite Convention Center. It features a meet and greet and a costume ball. TexasHauntersConvention.com for more info.
And that is an awesome group of people behind that conference. I know they're going to do a great job with it.
Yes, and I've been seeing some of the vendors who are getting ready to...
Yeah, they've got a kick-ass looking their... vendor floor. Yeah. The appearance of things.
Yeah.
I am super stoked for this conference. I wish we could go.
I do too.
Because we had so much fun at Halloween Haunt-Fest, which was in the same building and had a lot of the same people behind it.
Right. And I would love one of the little haunted, homemade haunted skirts, or handmade, not homemade. Well, I guess it's the same thing. But handmade haunted skirts that I've been seeing posted in some of the groups.
Yeah, there's been a lot of kick-ass stuff going on there, so I'm very excited about this conference. It's a pity you're allergic to the building.
I know.
You and your weird allergies. In fact, there was a joke today about on Facebook. Someone posted about how Vic's VapoRub truck crashed and there's no congestion for 8 hours. I'm like, yes, but Crystal died in the aftermath.
Exactly.
She's allergic to Vic's VapoRub.
Yes.
That's her idea of a special kind of hell.
It is. Yeah, I believe that Reed shared that with us.
Yes.
Long time listener.
Oh, yeah, it was Reed, wasn't it? Reed, you're trying to kill Crystal. I hope you feel bad.
He doesn't even know he was trying to kill me.
Okay, I was trying to kill Crystal. I should feel bad.
Yes, you should, because you knew this.
All right, fair enough. All right, so before we jump into this week's topic, we got to do some housekeeping. Mm-hmm. This is part one of a two-part series. Next week, we're going to do the opposite. Reasons the haunt and future of the haunt industry looks amazing.
Yeah.
And then after that, we got news.
And then after that, it's back to your regularly...
scheduled... some other bull crap will be after that. We ain't decided yet. But anyways, basically, we've done a whole series of episodes talking about the future of the haunt industry.
Mm-hmm.
And various signs, things that are good, things that are... like, we talked extensively about consolidation in the haunt industry,
right,
for example. Things that are good, things that are bad. And we just kind of wanted to take those ideas and bring them into one place. And we realized there was too much for one episode. The original idea I had was just, let's do this in one episode. And then we had like 8 and 8 of each things. And it was like, okay, we need to split this up because we're going to be talking like 3.5 hours or some shit.
Yeah.
It's going to be too long. To be clear, though, we are starting with the reasons the industry's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We are not actively pessimists about the future of the haunt industry.
No.
In fact, one of the things I realized when organizing all the stuff today to get do this episode was I do think the positive signs outweigh the bad. But that doesn't mean everything is rosy either.
Right.
I don't want to come off as a glorified, as an optimist either. We're an industry, we have opportunities, and we have struggles.
You just want to be a realist, don't you?
Yes, I do. The glass is half full with fucking water, Marge. Jeez. And actually, in my case, it's probably half full of rum. And it's probably half full of rum because I drank the other half.
Or because, you know, you went to knitting on Wednesday.
Oh, and they poured half an actual glass of rum. Yeah, I might get a little sloshed on Wednesday. Not entirely my fault.
No.
Partly my fault. Not entirely my fault.
Well, you know that the expectation is they're going to hand you a glass of whatever you're drinking that night.
And it's whiskey there, though. It's not rum.
Yeah.
So the rum is overpriced.
Yeah. So.
But that's neither here nor there. Now we're talking about Jonathan's drinking habits. Yay! Great podcast. Yeah. Who knew this was Haunt Weekly? We're like, what is it, 10 minutes in?
Yeah.
All we've done are the conference reminders. Great job, team.
Well, you know, that talks about haunting stuff.
It is. Okay, fair enough. But yes, but we wanted to talk about both the positive and the negative signs as a way so that we could think about how we are going to adjust for the future.
Yeah.
Not to say we're doomed. I'm gonna sing the doom song. Anyone who laughed at that is our immediate friend. 7 years later. Well, I don't remember how long he was in the damn UFO. I forgot.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I just remember the doom song.
Yes.
So let's rip the band-aid off and let's talk about some reasons the haunt industry future may not look that bright. Yeah, that was a hell of a transition.
I know.
Shut up.
It's like, Demi Doom. Now the doom.
Now the doom. Good night, everybody. We are recording way too late.
Apparently.
Just give it up now.
Actually, we're not recording late enough is the problem.
That's also probably very true. It's just been a hell of a weekend.
Yeah.
All right. Festivals, man. Festivals will do this to you.
Yeah.
All right. Reason one, it's one we've talked about extensively in the past, is consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
Groups like the 13th Floor Entertainment Group, or 13 Feg... that's not actually their abbreviation. I totally made that up.
Yeah, it was
one. 13 Feg.
No.
No.
Okay. No.
No, they're
just,
one.
Just say their full name,
13 Floor Entertainment Group have been purchasing many haunted attractions, specifically many of the biggest haunted attractions.
Yeah.
They alone currently own 15 different haunts, 2 major escape games, 2 other venues, and 4 different touring events.
Right.
And their touring events aren't necessarily all touring events. They identify, like, their Christmas thing and their Valentine's Day haunt as touring events. I think that's kind of... That's something you make your haunts do.
Yeah, that's not really...
Not going for a tour. They have two things I consider actual touring events and 2 events their haunts do that they branded and own.
Right.
That sounds more accurate to me.
Okay.
Based on my understanding. Not that their website or that their many websites are doing a lot to help with said understanding.
Right.
Here's the thing, though. Consolidation is rarely good in an industry that wants to grow and thrive. Consolidation is usually a sign that an industry is either entering a maturation phase where it's going to plateau, or, God help us, the other side of the downslope.
Yeah.
You know. For example, think about, like, with ride sharing. Mm-hmm. We're seeing new ride sharing companies, smaller ones, but they're coming up.
Right.
But they're also getting bought out by Uber and Lyft and so forth as well. This consolidation is kind of hindering the ability of new companies to come in.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about wrestling.
Oh yeah, wrestling. No, wrestling's a good one.
When they consolidated everything.
Oh God, back in the pretty early much. 2000s when ECW and WCW went out of business, like within a week of each other or some shit?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Like that, and then WWE, and then Vince McMahon just twirling his non-existent mustache. He needs a mustache. All villains should have mustaches. But anyways, he doesn't have a mustache.
No.
But anyways, it makes it very difficult for smaller competitors to get started, and that makes it very difficult for them to grow into larger ones, and for the industry at large to grow.
Right.
They just simply can't compete with the marketing, the scale, etc. They simply can't afford to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I don't think 13th Floor or any of these other larger companies are evil. Be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a lot of things right. In fact, when they bought the old House of Shock and became New Orleans Nightmare, they did a lot of smart things, a lot of very good things. They made it a more general audience haunt.
Right.
They started paying their actors.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
These are good things. They brought a lot of good with them. This isn't bash on 13th Floor. I don't
want it to be
that. I love these guys for a lot of the things they do. It's just an acknowledgement that consolidation brings with it problems.
Yes.
Basically, it's, you know, if you think about the lower tier haunts being the soil, the new startup haunts being the soil
mm-hmm.
from which the industry grows.
Yeah.
The soil's got some problems right now.
Right.
And those problems seem to be growing. And I don't really have a good answer for that. Mm-hmm. Because problem two... Mm-hmm. also plays into this, which is we are a very top-heavy industry.
Yeah, no kidding.
This is according to America Haunts, not American Haunts. I don't know why that's in the goddamn notes.
Because you put it there.
I know I put it there. I don't know why it's in there. Only 1% of haunts get more than 40,000 guests per year.
Yeah.
Only 10% get more than 12K. According to them, they say the average, the mean, if you will, is right around 8,000 guests per seven. They say most get 7.5 to 10K guests. They say the average is around 8K. It's easy to see that there is this sharp curve that favors the far side, the one percenters, if you will.
Yeah.
The visitor disparity of the industry of sports. Yeah. It definitely seems to favor very large mega haunts who are getting an extremely large share of the customer base.
Right. And that's going to be true in a lot of industries, not just the haunt industry, where the bigger brands are going to get the most customers.
And
just
I agree.
Because they can market to bigger audience.
Well, and a market that kind of correlates to this is the beer market.
Right.
You have, obviously, Bud Light, Miller Light, all those Budweiser, all those beers, which, of course, do way more business than your local brewery. Like, for us, it'd be a beat-up.
Yeah. Well, now we've got several local breweries.
Yeah, we've got tons of local breweries. But the thing about it is this, and, like, biologists talk about this all the time. Trees will form a canopy in a forest, right?
Right.
That's like the mega haunts here, the big haunts. They form this canopy.
Right.
And they capture all the yummy, yummy, yummy sunlight they can through those leaves, right?
Yeah.
And some of that sunlight filters through. Now, it's not worth it for the trees to pursue the light that escapes them.
Right.
They're too big. It takes too much energy. It's just not worth it.
Right.
But that light allows the underbrush.
Right.
Right now, as an industry, we have a lot of trees. The undergrowth is struggling in that analogy.
Yeah.
And that's a continuing problem because of the third problem we've talked about, which is the higher cost of operation.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll get into that in more detail in a minute, but the long story short, what I wanted to highlight with these first two problems is that you're right. It's not necessarily abnormal for an industry to be top heavy. In fact, most industries are to some degree. Soda industry is extremely top heavy. It's only got two major players, for example.
Yeah.
That is a common thing. But the trend is going more that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's getting to a point where, like I said, the undergrowth, the smaller haunts are struggling, and the higher cost of operation is one of the reasons.
Yeah, it does seem like we've heard more and more small haunts closing in the past couple of years than previous.
Yeah. And we don't always get to find out why haunts close.
Right.
Sometimes they do a post and explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, what we usually learn is that it has something to do with the cost of business.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that just makes dead obvious sense.
Right.
But here's the deal. Operating costs are continuing to rise pretty much across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
According to REIS and Statista, the value of commercial property is rising, and vacancy is either decreasing or staying flat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true across warehouse, office space, shopping regions, everything.
Yeah.
This is pretty much blanketly true. This means higher rents and fewer people willing to sell, especially considering they can get more for their rent money.
Right.
So, if your solution is, oh yeah, screw the higher rent, we'll just raise money and buy.
No.
That may not work so good.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem because there are fewer willing sellers because rents are rising. Currently, commercial rent space is increasing about 2% per year, which that's not super high.
Right.
But it is higher than what it was doing. Go back to 2010.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, the rents were just shooting down because the commercial space, in particular in warehouse and office, was hitting a cellar due to the economy kind of, you know.
Right.
And basically, those spaces became cheaper to both rent and buy. Ever since about 2011 or so, it's been tick straight up. And the curve has a kind of exponential look to it. Started out real slow on the increases, mm-hmm. and it's getting faster, and the rate is accelerating. So, yeah, expect your rent to go up next time your lease is up. Expect, you know what I mean? These are the challenges you're going to face.
Yeah, well, and a lot of times, because we are a seasonal business, it's hard to rent for just a few months.
Yeah.
It's hard to find those kind of leases. And if there are less people willing to outright sell, then you're going to find it that much harder to find someone who's going to lease it for just a few months.
Yeah, that is one of the things. Much like spirit stores, oddly enough, some right. haunts, especially smaller haunts, mm-hmm. have thrived on very, very short-term leases.
Yeah. Like short-term and storage. Storage lease is a
yeah.
one that's been used often for our haunts.
Yeah, too. Where they rent it as a business for 3 months and storage for the other nine.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that done at least a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird arrangement, but from the perspective of the owner, if they don't have a prospective tenant to go into that place,
right.
this is someone who's going to pay money into the place, who's going to maintain it, run the goddamn air conditioning. If you're in New Orleans, this is a very big deal.
Yeah.
This might seem like a minor thing, but your AC costs will be high. And if you don't run the AC in a lot of these units year-round, mold, mildew, you're going to have problems. These right. units were not designed
no.
to be exposed to the elements. So yeah, you have a situation where this commercial property value is increasing, vacancy is, like I said, flatlining or decreasing. Owners are seeing dollar signs.
Yeah.
They think this, they're seeing this property is more valuable, and they're seeing that they can get higher quality, what they see as higher quality tenants.
Right.
And they're seeing that they can get more money from them.
Yeah.
They're not super worried about vacant buildings anymore, even though. In some cases, they still should be.
Yeah, they really should.
Because just because vacancy is going down doesn't mean it's nothing.
Right.
Believe me, there's still vacant property to be found. I think vacancy in commercial property was like 16% or 14 to 16% in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So one out of every eight properties is still vacant. It's just way better than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Right.
Now, this has been coupled with another aspect of it, which is the increased cost of fire code compliance. It's not so much that new fire code regulations have been coming online, it's that the enforcement of existing regulations has become much more tight.
Right.
We've been hearing about haunts who have been ordered by their local fire marshal to put in a sprinkler system. Well, that's technically been a requirement for quite some time.
Right.
But a lot of haunts skirted around it one way or another, either through fire marshals not caring or not, or just they would compromise on it in some way.
Or they were grandfathered in because it's a historical building.
Yeah, that's becoming less and less a thing. So right. we're seeing that particular requirement. And sprinklers are one of those things where, yeah, it's not that expensive to build into a new property, but to retrofit an old one with it
yeah.
is damned expensive.
It is.
And going back to the whole thing, that newer commercial property,
mm-hmm.
that's some of the more expensive.
Right.
So looking for inexpensive commercial property that you can rent and use for a haunt, yeah, you kind of wind up in a devil's choice there.
Yeah.
And then there's also the increased focus on paying actors, which, I repeat, is a good thing.
Yes.
We like it when actors are paid.
Yes.
It makes us happy.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a commercial business, there are lots of laws that say you should have paid actors.
Yeah.
So.
And here's the thing. I do think overall, paying actors is a positive thing. It's positive for the haunt. It's positive for the actors.
Right.
It's a win-win. But it does mean labor costs go up.
Yeah.
And even if labor is not a significant part of your cost, it's another thing that adds up.
You know,
and then you have the customer demand for high-tech scares and the customers wanting more and more and more out of their haunts.
Right.
They want longer walkthroughs. They want better effects.
Yeah.
They want cooler things.
Yeah, and the tech industry is, you know, expanding into this area.
Yeah.
So we're going to have new toys to play with, but they're going to be expensive toys.
Yeah. I mean, a single pneumatic prop has long gone for thousands and thousands of dollars.
Right.
And that's not getting cheaper.
No. And now you've got all sorts of digital implemented things, too. And
one of the interesting things, I've noticed this, is one of the props I've watched is Shake and Bake. The guy in the electric chair.
Yeah.
We love him. And he was actually at a haunt we worked at, Chamber of Horrors. We worked at him, worked around. And he was really great for letting us know where customers were in the haunt.
Yeah.
That son of a bitch is loud.
Yes. Yes, he is.
You hear him clean across the goddamn property. Going off. So he was real handy for that. But that prop has not dropped in price.
No.
I think it's gone up slightly in price, if anything. Same prop, same everything. It's getting more expensive. Now, that's going to be because of inflation, obviously. But now there are newer, better, more exciting props.
Right.
He hasn't gone down in price. Those newer props are more expensive.
Yeah, and I see this going as the way of computer-controlled puppets. Like, puppeted monsters that are from, you know,
yeah, it's,
boards and things.
It's absolutely bananas. And here's one of the things to think about. Even if you're paying actors, mm-hmm. right? Remember that most haunts are only open for about 25 nights a year.
Right.
They're open for a month and a half. They're usually open about 25 of those nights.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying an actor. You're probably paying a minimum wage, so $7.25 an hour. If you have the idea of replacing your actors
right.
with a prop, how many trouble-free, maintenance-free years do you have to get out of that prop before it's cost-efficient to replace an ass actor with it?
Yeah.
It's a lot of goddamn years. I don't have the math in front of me, but it's not going
to
be...
Well, not only that, but a prop is harder to change.
Yeah.
You can put an actor in a different costume and a different role.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can't do that with props.
So if you're thinking one of the solutions here to the labor cost is we'll get more props...
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
The math ain't checking out very well.
No.
All right. Moving on. All this extra expense for reason four, haunting is still a very small industry.
Yeah.
We love it. It's our little baby. It's our wonderful world of fantasy and horror. But it is not a big industry. And let me point this out. This is, once again, according to America Haunts, haunted attractions generate between 300 million and 500 million ticket sales per year. We'll take the high end.
Okay.
Because I think it's probably closer to half a billion. You say it like half a billion, we sound freaking huge, doesn't it?
It does.
Meanwhile, according to Box Office Mojo, Captain Marvel, just one film, got $353 million, and it's not done.
Right.
And Infinity War a couple years ago, made $689 million
right.
in ticket sales. That makes it significantly bigger than our entire industry for just one film.
At the high end
of the estimates.
Yeah. That's now, pretty insane.
That is really insane.
Yeah.
And there are films released every week.
Right.
And the movie industry is still not itself a very big industry.
No.
Something worth thinking about. It's probably... Between it and video games, I think you've got the biggest entertainment industry. So you have video games now that make billions upon release.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah.
We're not that huge of an industry from a dollar standpoint. Now, here's the thing. A small industry can mean, hey, that's ripe for rapid growth. But we're also an older and established industry, too. Modern haunted attractions have been around since the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And commercial ones around since at least the 80s.
Yeah.
We're not this brand new upstart industry.
No. Nowhere near.
You know, we are an established player, and this is roughly our size.
Yeah.
Not a good sign. It's a bit of a kick in the teeth. Once again, that's according to America Haunts, a trade organization for haunted attractions.
Right.
And this growth, and though there has been growth in that amount year to year, a lot of that growth has been driven by rising ticket prices,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily rapidly rising tickets sales. Here's the thing. I was not able to find hard data. I looked at multiple sources. I could not find information on the average ticket price year to year to year, but I have our records.
Yeah.
And how much... Conveniently, we get to list it as an expense on taxes.
Right.
So I actually have the numbers on what we spend.
Yeah. And we know that some of our listeners have their spreadsheets.
Yeah, and we've looked at theirs too.
Yeah.
And yes, the plural of anecdote is not data.
No.
I get it.
Yes.
I'm not saying this is hard data. But we know that for us, expenditures on haunted attraction tickets have gone up about 15% year to year, mostly for the same haunted attractions.
Yeah, and that might be because of a decreased in ticket sales. They're trying to make up that cost.
Maybe. The owners seem happy with their attendance levels that we've talked to.
Right.
But at the same time, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it maybe isn't necessarily a decrease in attendance, but even if attendance is flat or only going up some, if those expenses are increasing, they're raising ticket prices to stay ahead of that goddamned expense curve we were talking about.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, that is significantly faster inflation. In fact, it's multiple times faster than inflation. And interesting fact, I tried to find things that were increasing at the same pace according to inflation.
Right.
Do you know what I got to? Huh. College textbooks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's at least in our case, once again, this isn't data.
Right.
And we acknowledge this is not data, but in our case, the amount we've spent has increased year to year at a pace very similar to college textbooks and also college tuition.
Yeah.
And as someone who has a stepson in college, fuck both of those things.
Yeah.
Fuck them hard. Fuck him right in
the... Yeah. Well, especially comparing his tuition cost and textbook costs compared to when we went to school.
Yeah. I knew it would be higher.
Yeah.
I anticipated it'd be more, but jumping Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Jesus fracking Christ.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, I did not expect that much.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. This is an entertainment where, textbooks and tuition are considered an investment. These are entertainment things. These are the first things to go when the market heads south. These are the first things to die when the economy gets rough.
Right.
These are the fluffy expenditures, the happy things that people buy. Yeah, there's only so much the market can bear. I mean, think about it this way. People, for most haunts are a group action. They at least come in a pair like we do.
Right.
And usually come in three, four, or more. And the average haunt group last time I checked was, I think, 3. Blah, 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 something.
Right.
So we'll just say 3 because I'm lazy and don't feel like fucking around with it too much. In many haunts, the cost for a group of 3 or even a family of 3 to go is more than $100.
Yeah.
And it's going up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how long is it going to be until people just go to a movie instead or an escape room or something else?
Or something where the experience is going to last longer.
Yeah. Or cost significantly less. Yeah, yeah, and cost significantly less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Number 6, haunted attractions are still almost entirely seasonal.
Right.
Multiple haunts have been making efforts to try to extend the season or add dates. There's been some success there, which I'm very happy about. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, most of the business in the haunted attraction industry is done over about a 6-week period.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, it's really goddamn hard to run a business with year-round expenses and only 6 weeks of revenue.
It is.
One bad season, or even a bad week in some cases, can kill a haunt. Mm-hmm. House of Shock, the reason it closed the first time,
right,
was largely because they had to close Halloween one year due to rain.
Yeah.
That crushed their financials. They were a very large haunt.
Yeah.
They were one of those 1% haunts that were putting up those kinds of numbers.
Right.
They were still so much at the margins, mm-hmm, in terms of the profit margins, that one bad Halloween basically put them in the toilet.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It is.
But that's kind of how it is in this industry.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there were other factors
too, but still, that
did hurt.
We've heard multiple people say that was...
That hurt.
That was the nail in the coffin,
yeah,
if you pardon the expression. Maybe not the best expression in this industry. Nail in the coffin. Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Wrong audience for that one. I got it. Okay, calm down.
Yeah,
we're not talking about actual coffins.
No.
So that brings us to... And that continues the other issue, which is, long story short, haunts are trying to expand into non-haunt items, but it's not necessarily going as smoothly yet.
Right.
And the reason for that is number 7, the increase in competition from outside sources.
Mm-hmm.
Non-haunted run escape games are very real, axe throwing, other things. Because if you think about what makes a haunted attraction unique, Mm-hmm. In a very, very digital world, I am living in a digital world, and I... Okay.
No.
No, stop that. Okay, bad.
Yes.
Bad. Yeah, I got it. But seriously, the issue we have is that the benefit we provide is a very real, very physical, very visceral experience that a lot of people struggle to find day to day.
Right.
And we provide that for a ticket fee. And that is awesome. But more and more places are getting into that. They are occupying the market. And that, like I said, that includes escape games. It includes axe throwing. And we think of a lot of these things as kind of hipstery. Especially like axe throwing. Like that has that bend where you imagine, like you picture an axe throwing venue.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that it's providing that real world, unique, physical experience.
Right.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. Now,
and let me give a comparison here. Once again, America Haunts, their best estimates say that there are 1,200 haunted attractions in the country. That seems close-ish to right.
Mm-hmm.
But, in about 2006, there were just 22 escape rooms in the country.
Right.
In 2016, 10 years later, there were more than 900.
Yeah, that's a big increase.
It's very likely that between now and 2019, escape rooms have actually passed haunted attractions in number of locations.
Which is just crazy.
And I know that's true here locally.
Yeah.
I can name six or seven escape rooms in southeast Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one less now, unfortunate things to rise.
Yeah.
Getting rid of theirs, but goddamn, I can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can only name five major haunts.
Right.
Five commercial haunts. So, you know?
Yeah.
Think about it. Escape games have grown, they have more locations, they're year-round, and here's the thing, from the customer standpoint, many of them provide better deals. Ticket prices are comparable to haunted attractions, but, they give you a guaranteed 1 hour playtime, where a haunted attraction typically is less than that. We'll say not an hour.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that's coming onto the scene that I've seen start to grow, start to get a foothold here, are the murder mystery dinners.
Yes.
And the entire city is becoming a Clue game.
I can't remember this coming weekend or the one after.
Sometime soon.
It's very soon. We looked into it, but it was on a date we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So we're not going.
Yeah, but those are things that we would pay for to go and check out.
Yeah. And it's a very unique experience, a very novel experience. And one of the advantages that haunts do have
right.
over escape rooms is I can go to an escape room any goddamn week.
Yeah.
But I can only go to a haunt when it's open those 6 weekends or so. 6 weekends plus Hell Week.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think it would be cool for haunts to partner up with some of these... Or to put on their own whodunit dinners.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely see a place like the Mortuary doing that.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, yeah, the ticket prices, though, like I said, there's a favor there toward the escape rooms. It'll be interesting to see how this works long term.
Right.
Because, I mean, I agree that I don't think we are direct competition with non-haunt escape rooms and so forth. We definitely provide similar experiences, and we need to be thinking about them as being in the orbit.
Well, and here's the problem with non-haunt escape games. A lot of them are not good.
Yeah.
They just plain aren't. They don't compare with haunted house escape games because the level of detail is not there. There's a lot of differences. But if you're a first-time customer and you walk into a shopping center escape game, you may or may not go to another one after that.
I mean, like, there was one when we were in Belleville.
Uh-huh.
I remember this. And we kind of... This was a little bit tragic. We looked up and found there was an escape room, like, 2 miles from where we were staying.
Yeah.
In the hotel. Like, literally almost walking distance.
Right.
If it hadn't been a giant fucking highway between the two, it might have been walking distance.
Yeah.
That didn't go so good.
No.
That was not a great experience. But then again, you had the other one we went to in the area, Escape 10, which unfortunately isn't there anymore, which was awesome and
right.
was fun.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy it and tremendously, but, you know, but that's just it. It's like, we have to understand, especially since haunts are trying to push into this area.
Yeah.
That there's non-haunt competition here, and yeah.
Well, and I think that the thing is that how you market it is going to be all the difference. If you market it as a completely immersive experience, and show that, you know, we are different as an industry with escape games than the escape game in a box places, yeah, then we can succeed at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still an issue.
It's definitely an issue. And that's, mm-hmm, once again, a reason to be a bit wary about the future.
Yeah.
But the final reason, and this was one you mentioned in passing and kind of curious about, and I looked up to it, and goddamn, you're right,
uh-huh,
is demographics.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about the United States population, guys. It is getting older.
Yeah.
Seriously, picture your haunt customer, your average haunt goer. Yours will probably be different than ours. We have slightly different demographics because we're home haunters still.
Right.
But the pro haunts we've worked at and places we've been, pro haunts we've gone to, I can pretty much readily describe them as being middle class, usually white, but getting better about racial diversity in our haunt customer base, and either teen to young 20s. Usually we're the oldest people around.
Yeah.
We're the old fogies when we go to haunts.
Yes.
We're the old fuckers.
Yes. Yes, we get stuck in with kids and they think we work there.
Yeah, they... No, we're too old to work here. You don't seem to understand. If we're too old to be customers, we're probably too old to work here, too.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But yeah, here's the thing. This is according to the census. By 2035, the population over 65 will nearly double. Mm-hmm. And that's only 15 years out. And it will represent a much larger percentage of the overall U.S. population.
Uh-huh.
And to make matters worse, the number of adults living in the middle class has already dropped by several percent points and is expected to continue dropping.
Right. Yeah.
Not good things for a, you know, group that, for an industry that needs young, middle class people to stay open.
Right. So start planning your retirement home haunted houses now.
Yeah.
That's where it's going to be at.
Yeah, that's rough news for our demography. Now here's the thing, the group that is under 65 will still grow, but it will not grow as rapidly either in raw numbers,
right,
or in percent as the over 65 group, as the older group. So yeah, this means that at the very best, growth is going to be slower than industries that have a broader appeal and can appeal to a larger demographics.
Right.
So we need to either appeal to the larger demographics,
yeah,
or just expect that growth is going to be slower.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, is going to be difficult in an industry where the expenses are going up pretty damn fast.
Right.
Yeah, this is depressing.
Yeah, well, we knew it would be.
Yeah, we knew it would be. But yeah, I mean, the demographic situation, I think, has me as worried as any of these, honestly, after reading the statistics.
Yeah.
We're getting much, much older as a nation, and even in... There seems to be a trend of fewer and fewer children per couple.
Right.
And so we're not getting as many young people to replace the old people, right, as they age out of haunted attractions. I mean, do you really age out of haunted attractions?
Some people do.
Normal people do.
Normal people.
Ready, normal people?
Exactly.
Ready. And if you laughed at that joke, you're an immediate friend. Because you know what the internet is for.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's really going to be a problem because we're going to have to find ways to appeal to older and older customers. And even if it's not necessarily, like, you made the joke about your retirement home, I don't think it's necessarily that, but we have to find ways to reach into the 30s and 40s, and we have to find older people because, right, we need a broader base now because we can't depend solely on young people.
Yeah, and we may need to start, you know, trying to reach out to grandparents and have grandparents take grandchildren, you, yeah, know, make it more family friendly, even more family friendly than we already are, you know.
murder, death,
yes,
disease, horrible stuff,
yeah,
violence, families,
yeah.
It's always, and here's the thing, we always talk about making haunted attractions family friendly,
uh-huh,
and for some reason in American society, family friendly has become lexicon for kitty.
Yeah.
Like, there was a family-friendly event at the Point today.
Right.
They called it Family Pirate Day. Pirate with a Y for some reason. Who the fuck spells pirate with a Y? Losers. That's who. But anyways, Pirate Dave, I guess Pirate Rum.
Yeah.
They're the only people.
Were they giving out pirate drinks at the Pirate Family Day?
No, they were not. It was all kids and dressing up like pirates. And that's exactly what it was. It was for kids.
Yeah.
But I mean family friendly and actually trying to appeal to all of the family.
Right. Exactly. This is why, you know, the haunted park idea is not a bad thing.
No.
Like, the Scream Park.
Yeah, the Scream Park right here. But also, remember Spookers? We talked about the movie. They have a couple of haunts, or I think one trail and one haunted attraction, which were listed as 18 and up.
Right.
But everything else there was for the kids, too.
Exactly.
Which meant you could bring, you know, the little one and the big one. And
right. Well, and that's like, you know, the Scream Park here. You know, you've got the carnival rides. You've got no scare zones. You've got things that progressively get more scary.
Yeah.
You know, and you can choose what to go to.
Yeah, you had the fun house, which was limited scare, but more wacky walking and
yeah,
some spooky stuff, but not a lot of jump scares in there.
Right, exactly.
I think that's something we're going to have to figure out, is how our attractions can really appeal to a wider variety of customers age-wise. Because these demographics, it's really interesting, because if you look at, like, you would expect, like, if you imagine, like, the entire U.S. population, you would expect to be like a pyramid.
Right.
Where you have a bunch of people at the bottom that have just gotten born, and then it, like, up pretty much into, like, getting the people over 100 and whatever.
Yeah.
Almost like a triangle. Maybe a little fatter around the teenage years or whatever, but largely, like, mostly be a pyramid, right?
Okay.
No. The future estimate is pretty much a straight goddamn line up until, like, 75, then it tapers off. It's more like an obelisk, you know? And it's kind of weird because, yeah, it is a little fatter at the bottom still, but it's not the wide base you'd expect.
Right.
And certainly not the wide base that followed the baby boom.
Yeah.
You know, that's done.
In fact, I would think that we'd be a little top-heavy because of the baby boom.
Yeah, and I think we are entering a top-heavy period.
Yeah.
And people are living longer. I mean, God bless medicine. It's wonderful. I'm very happy for the extra hole in my head.
Right.
Marvels of modern medicine, guys.
Right.
They found my brain. But no, they did that. Yeah, people are living longer. People are staying ambulatory and fully functional into older and older age.
Right.
You know, they say that the first person to reach 125 or whatever has probably already been born, is probably already approaching it.
Yeah.
So we're living longer, and that's, it's the demographics, man.
Yeah.
It's just demographics, and people are having fewer babies.
Yeah.
Help the haunt industry. Have babies.
That's terrible advice.
That is terrible advice. And it's terrible advice we haven't followed.
Yes.
Well, I think that's all we have for this. Well, this has been depressing enough. I think we should just end it here and do our closure. What do you think?
I think that's good.
All right. Well, thank you very much for putting up with us the past hour. I promise you, the good news is next week.
Right.
We just decided to do the bad news first because whenever, like, someone comes and say, okay, I got bad news and good news, what you want first? I always say the bad news because, you know, I'd rather end on the good news. And then it's usually, you know, something like, your dog is dead, but also you're getting $1,000 settlement. It's like, oh, God, that doesn't mean anything.
We're putting a hole in your head, but you won't have the dizziness anymore.
Yes. You know, it's one of those things. But anyways, bad news is done. Moving on to the good news.
Yeah.
I'm happy about that. And if you want to hear that good news, you gotta subscribe to us. Because there's no other physical possible way you can find it.
Nope.
None.
Nope.
I've checked. It's impossible. So go to hauntweekly.com. You can subscribe to us there. We're Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook. Like, follow, whatever the hell it is you do on these social media sites. I don't know. Give us an interrobang or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever the cool kids are doing these days. You can also go to... I don't even know. I made this crap up.
I know. It sounds like it.
You can also go to tinyurl.com/hauntweekly. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. But you can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Wherever you prefer to get your podcast, we are there.
Yes.
On that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this has been episode 174 for Haunt Weekly. Talking about reasons to be worried about the future of the haunt industry. We will see you guys next time.